Dodge 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry. Preston, Santa Ana winds kicking up once again in Southern California. Firefighters keeping a close eye on the flames. Dozens of water trucks are in place to replenish supplies after hydrants ran dry last week. Fire crews are also better prepared, but Los Angeles County's fire chief says everyone in potential fire zones should be ready to evacuate at any minute. Confirmation hearings beginning for Pete Hegseth, President-elect Donald Trump's pick to be defense secretary. ABC's Rachel Scott on Capitol Hill says he's accused of alcohol abuse.
Hegseth was also accused of sexually assaulting a woman in 2017. He called the encounter consensual, but his attorney says he settled with the woman in order to keep his job. Sources tell ABC News the FBI has completed its background investigation into Hegseth, but never interviewed the woman. It's unclear why.
In his final report, special counsel Jack Smith says his team stood up for the rule of law as it investigated the president-elect's actions in the days after losing the 2020 election. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health has released new data showing a majority of teens in the state have been affected by mental health issues. According to their data, the number of kids and teens that have experienced depression has risen by 42% over the last decade, particularly in girls and teens who identify as LGBTQ. Officials also say that while the number of mental health professionals in schools has increased in recent years, the total number is still below recommended levels, especially in more rural areas. The Wisconsin State Telecommunications Foundation is offering scholarships for high school seniors planning to attend a two-year technical college. The program is sponsored by various telephone companies in the state, and students can apply for one-time scholarships between $1,000 and $1,500. The application materials can be found on the WSTF Scholarship website, and they must be submitted by February 17th. The program has awarded nearly $2 million to nearly 1,500 students since its creation in 1986. A group of environmental activists gathered in the lobby of the Department of Natural Resources in Madison on Monday to protest Enbridge Energy's Line 5 pipeline. The pipeline reroute project has faced strong opposition from environmental groups and the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa following a recent permit approval from the DNR. The company is making plans to reroute the pipeline around the reservation rather than through it, but tribal leaders say the proposed reroute is upstream and still puts the local environment in danger. A Washington man has been charged after allegedly trying to take a Rice Lake police officer's gun while resisting arrest. 35-year-old Adon Castillo was charged with attempting to disarm a peace officer and battery to a law enforcement officer on Wednesday. Authorities had received a report of someone who appeared to match the description of a suspect wanted by the FBI. When he refused to show ID, the officers detained him for fingerprinting and he attempted to grab the weapon. Authorities later confirmed he was not the wanted suspect. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
A milestone for the Badgers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, after a string of conference wins, Wisconsin is back in the nation's top 25, ranked 24th this week. The Badgers host Ohio State tonight in Madison. And if they win, it'll be Greg Gard's 200th career win as head coach. Gard has helped players improve their game, like forward Stephen Crowell.
Steve is best when he's aggressive. And I think the last four games, we've tweaked how we sub him in and out a little bit. I think it's helped him, but he knows an aggressive Steve is the best Steve.
NBA, the Bucks are in action tonight at Fiserv Forum. They host the Sacramento Kings. NFL, Packers players cleaning out their lockers now that the season is over after losing to the Eagles Sunday night. The Bears have requested to interview Packers offensive coordinator Adam Stanovich for their head coaching job. They also plan to meet with Mike McCarthy, who was not renewed by the Dallas Cowboys. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
It is cold out there again this morning with a wind chill from minus 15 to minus 20, and we're going to keep that wind chill generally below zero for a good chunk of the day. Sunshine today with a high near 10, tonight 6 below, tomorrow breezy, mostly cloudy, but warmer with a high of 24. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, 7 below zero.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain.
Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
What's worse, fast drivers or slow drivers? Karina listening on WAUK in Milwaukee.
Slow drivers are the worst. They think too slow. They stop in the middle of the highway to think about where they're going. Maybe they need to turn left and right. They're changing lines for, oh my God, I can do all day long.
Karina?
Yes.
Can you tell us what you really think?
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Maggie Dawn.
At 2 o'clock, I address whether the January 6th committee destroyed evidence. You know, that little tidbit that's been flying around the MAGAverse. It ain't true. We discuss.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. The Buzz of the North. 910 AM WBZH.
Standing by the road with a heavy load from the seeds he sowed. And if you see your sister falling by the way, just stop and say, you're going the wrong way.
I know who that is. I'm trying to...
Glenn Campbell.
All right. 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my call, Sandy Williams, and you. Sandy, we've got one more caller for people who may just be joining us. What is the conversation?
I've been trying to talk about empathy, the use of skepticism rather than cynicism when we deal with one another, look for evidence and follow the facts, have an open mind, and try to understand what motivates everyone else.
All right, let's go to Susan from Kenosha. Susan, thank you for waiting. You say what?
I happen to agree with everything that you're talking about. The problem that we have in today's society, though, is we have people who are, you have to say, closed-minded. They have lived with this understanding of other people for generations upon generations, and they don't want to hear what you have to say. And so that is the problem. I have empathy. Earl has empathy. Sandy, you have empathy. But a large majority of these people think they're right. They will always believe that they're right. And no matter what you say, it's not going to change their mind. And that's why there is going to continue to be this division, because there's going to be the division between the people who are intelligent and the people who want to remain ignorant. And that's basically what it is.
Well,
and I love to listen to Tom. I love to listen to everybody talk. And I wish it was different, but it isn't. It's not going to change until people want it to change. That's when it will change.
Well, I would say this. I understand where you're coming from on this, but I do think one of the things we could all adopt as a process is when someone says something we disagree with, we could say, "Why do you think that? What is it that makes you think that?" Okay, and at least ask people to explain themselves and to dig deeper into their process. Because if people are operating based on knee-jerk, which is what you're describing, people have built-in reflexes about how they think and what they think, then asking them why they think that could be an opening wedge to moving people off of how they think and what they're thinking. Because I don't think it's a reflection of intelligence. I think it's rather a reflection of mindset. Okay, I don't think that 50% of this country or the 35% that might want to wear MAGA hats are necessarily less intelligent than we are. But I think they might be more intransigent than we are. But maybe what they need to be coaxed with is asking questions about what it is they're thinking and why. And that understanding might help us as well.
Hey, hey Susan, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Eric from Tulsa. Good morning to you, Eric. You say what?
Hello, Earl. Hello, Sandy. Well, this is the conversation, that's for sure. I'd like to say that, empathy is learned, of course, and familiarity with the subject of which you're talking about is an important factor, which is why this nation has worked to segregate people throughout our history, because if we don't know the experiences of others, it's very difficult to be empathetic to that experience. But beyond that, though, I'd like to ask and maybe, you know, start a conversation about, you know, at what point is the alleged ignorance that Sandy was talking about earlier willful? Because I think the numbers are a lot bigger than what we like to admit. And the reason it's allowed to fester, this willful ignorance that people walk around, like I said, it's the know-nothings. It's like we live in a state of the know-nothing party, because the same people that carry this willful ignorance also largely control this nation. So it's allowed to fester. Like if you ask, you know, how many adults in this country don't know what happened to George Floyd? And without that, you know, what part of their ignorance supposedly is behind the significant number of Americans that know about George Floyd but still maintain they died of a drug overdose? You know, I think that a large part of what you two are kind of going back and forth and why there's always this divide in this conversation is white people expect to be deferred to. We expect to always be deferred to. That's why you have white fragility and things like that, because we don't need, quote unquote, we don't feel we need to have these conversations because we're on top. Why would we bother having these conversations? But also, if you look at like the Dred Scott legacy, which is something I say far too often to myself and sometimes to others, there's a legacy that Dred Scott established in this country, and the Supreme Court Chief Justice at the time basically stated it in the belief that black people have no rights by which white people need to respect. And if you look today, I don't know if either of you seen the thing of the Louisiana Senator John Kennedy last week when there was a black woman FBI agent speaking.
Oh, yeah, I saw it, man. I saw it.
At a podium, and he just pushes her aside. That is the legacy of Dred Scott, where he didn't even have to say, excuse me, ma'am, could I speak, ma'am? He just feels that it's his right, because he's this old white male, to just push this black woman aside and take over the conference. And this is where, like Earl was talking about, you know, the empathy is, it's difficult for folks at the receiving end to even understand this. But this is how we're conditioned. And that legacy of Dred Scott, to me, I see it, if not every day, multiple times a week, one way or the other, where white people absolutely disregard black people and their opinions and their thoughts and their intelligence and their ideas just because we don't need to. We don't feel we need to. It's at our own expense, obviously. And let's remind ourselves that white middle class, you know, white males are the highest rate of suicide in this country. So we struggle with these things. We just don't talk about it, and we can't seem to bring ourselves around to deal with it as adults, which means none of us can evolve. Until we learn to do this, none of us will evolve. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Hey, Eric, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to respond to anything?
Well, I mean, he's absolutely right. And I do think that there is so much political cynicism around. I think that much of the politics, particularly from the right, is based on cynicism. It's based on appealing to cynicism, and it's based on instructing people on how to be cynics. And that's sort of what caught my interest with respect to this TED Talk, is that cynicism is so prevalent today, and it is viewed by so many people as being a sign of intelligence and shrewdness, when in fact it's a self-fulfilling prophecy towards failure. That's why I wanted to talk about it today. But, you know, we have a problem, and we have a problem in this country, which is that for many people, cynicism is a winning strategy, and instructing people on how to be cynics is a winning strategy. And much of the political process, I think, particularly from the conservative side, but it's basically developed a cynicism and a countervailing cynicism, as we've developed a cynical society. And until we get over that, I don't think we're going to get over it.
All right, let's go to Troy from Mount Hope. Good morning to you, Troy. You say what?
Okay, so I haven't heard every minute of the show, but am I right to say that none of your conservative callers have called in today?
You're right.
I think that's telling, that you're saying, you know, you're talking about being cooperative and understanding the other side, and CJ and Gary and the rest of their ilk, Kevin, called today to talk about that.
I think it's telling as well, Troy, Sandy.
Well, I basically set the tone for this, hoping that there would be a call, because my hope was that that they could go at least through the process we're going through of trying to project and empathize. But I think that, like I said, I think cynicism has been a winning strategy politically. I think a lot of people in this country have been taught cynicism, and that that the cynical view is a shrewd and smart view of things, when in fact I think it isn't.
All right, let's go to Mike from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. Thank you for the call. You say what?
Good morning. Thanks. Appreciate it. Hey, Sandy, I'm right on. But they are taught cynicism. I'd like to think that the very, very low reading capabilities of America, I think there's a correlation between, what was it, 54% of graduates have very poor reading grades. I think when you have a population that it has difficulty reading, you also have a population that has difficulty with critical thinking, number one. Number two, we have entire influence networks that exist for the purpose of cynicism and growing cynicism. To your point, cynicism is a game plan. It's a strategy. And it's being used against the American people for the obvious purpose of divide and conquer. We know all of this. Many of the callers that call on a regular basis refer to this early and often. I think if we want to make a dent into cynicism, how about taking what we know and running with it instead of running around in circles acting like we're blind? We're not blind. We know what many of the causes of the cynicism are, and it's divide and conquer strategy by complete networks that have become entrenched now for decades, pitching the same, ripping on America, saying everything was wrong, but never, ever offering a solution. It's always cynicism. It's always cynical. It's always a demonization of others. I think if American reading levels were improved, if we improved our critical thinking skills on our own, we can figure all this stuff out. But one thing for sure is that cynicism is a game plan that's being deployed against the American public, for sure.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much. Excuse me for the call. Definition of cynicism: an inclination to believe that people are motivated purely by self-interest. Skepticism, public cynicism about change is understandable. So yes, Andy, I think we had, some great callers and some great conversations. It is telling that, as we want to put our feet in the shoes of the other side, that in this instance, folks from the other side don't. So how do you begin can't get people from the other side to even buy into the conversation?
Well, I think you ask why. Why do you think that? What? Why?
Well, but you can't even get. You can't even.
Well,
get...
We can throw up our hands and decide there is no solution, or we can at least evaluate how it is that it might evolve.
All right, 855-752-4842. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Next up, what is killing local grocers?
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. As we approach the 15th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, we consider the estimated $15.9 billion spent in the 2024 campaign. While still tallying up the total, Money and Politics watchdog Open Secrets estimates the 2024 election cycle was the costliest ever, surpassing 2020's $15.1 billion. For context, the $15.9 billion estimate is larger than the state budgets of New Hampshire, Vermont, and Idaho combined. Only 24% of political contributions to candidates were small donations of $200 or less, down from 30% in 2020. When you consider contributions to PACs and other outside spending, that percentage drops further, with only 16% from small donors. The top 1% of donors, they contributed an estimated 50% of all political contributions. That means by far, our elections are not funded by citizens who actually vote, but by wealthy special interests and corporations whose interests may not align with the majority of voters. Open Secrets projects that outside spending alone, mostly by super PACs, will reach $5 billion. Now that the election is over, it's the inaugural fund setting records. The New York Times reports that donors to the Trump inaugural have contributed over $170 million. More on that tomorrow. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
This message is sponsored by WiskCaregiver.com. Now is the time to start a meaningful career as a caregiver. Make a real difference in people's lives. WiskCaregiver.com gives you two great options for free. Train for the in-demand caregiver workforce as a CDCP, Certified Direct Care Professional, or become a CNA, Certified Nurse Aide. All training is free. Plus, you can earn a $500 bonus. Learn more. Visit WiskCaregiver.com.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said, or you got a friend in me.
You know, when I listen to these tunes, the first thing I do is hear the voice. I know who the voice is. Who is that?
Randy Newman.
Okay, Randy Newman. Yeah. Yeah, you always like this stuff.
Yeah, well, Randy.
Simple, simplistic.
He's from New Orleans, and he's written a whole bunch of stuff. He made his fortune by making the music for animated shows, actually, Shrek and things like that.
Yeah.
But he's written a lot of stuff.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. Text us at that same number. Tuesday's my co-host, Sandy. So, Sandy, you know, I was asking you earlier. Here's an article that's in New York Times. I work at the FTC. I know what is killing local groceries. And I'm going to read a quick paragraph. Swaths of America have been hollowed out. Some people look at boarded up shops in small towns and some urban centers and think they just couldn't compete. As an antitrust enforcer, I have a different reaction. Maybe we missed something. For decades, our government stopped big retailers from pressuring suppliers for secret deals that were denied to smaller rivals. Let me repeat that again. For decades, our government stopped big retailers from pressuring suppliers for secret deals that were denied to smaller rivals. This was done under a law called the Robinson-Patman Act. It was at one point the most frequently enforced antitrust law at the Federal Trade Commission. But starting in the 1980s, that's Ronald Reagan, as part of a philosophical shift that embraced the idea that unfettered markets can resolve all ills. Officials hit the brakes and eventually stopped enforcing the law altogether. Consumers know what happened next. From the early 1980s, today's big box store chains flourished while over 100,000 small retailers closed shop. These closures particularly affected low-income communities and created food deserts, areas where healthy, affordable food is hard to find. 40 years ago, the term food deserts didn't exist. Now it's almost synonymous for rural and inner-city America. Sandy, this piqued my curiosity because I needed to find out if there is something called the Robinson-Patman Act, and it was created back in the 1900s to prevent what we're dealing with now. What happened?
Well, the Robinson-Patman Act was one of several. The Clayton Act and the Sherman Act were enacted to try and deal with the problems of monopolies and what it was doing to the marketplace. Robinson-Patman Act focuses primarily on discriminatory pricing and predatory pricing practices, which are the ability of an entity that is, because it is large and has market power, to exert force in such a way that it can underprice its competitors and price them out of the market. And what happened with the big box stores, starting with Walmart, which was one of the earliest in this business model, was they put a great deal of pressure on their suppliers to give them special pricing, you know, because a Walmart that has stores all over the country might buy 10 million of these widgets, and the little ma-and-pa store on Main Street might buy 20 of them. And so they cut deals that involved shifting the responsibility to the supplier, to the manufacturer, to keep the shelves filled with the widgets and what have you. And they got price concessions that then couldn't be matched by ma-and-pa when they were selling widgets. And when the Walmart moved in on the outskirts of small-town America, the stores on Main Street, small-town America, were put out of business by the low pricing of these big box stores. The antitrust laws are there for good reason. And, you know, some of this change in the business model was not the result of predatory conduct, but much of it is. And one of the practices that remains is this whole coupon practice that is used by large grocery stores, large big box stores, which is to every day have special deals that can't be matched by the competitor on Main Street, that you can bring the coupon in and get it, okay? But once you're in the store, you're also going to buy not just what's on the coupon, but X, Y, and Z as well. And so coupons have evolved as being one of these methods for driving the small business out of the position of being a competitor. And furthermore, putting to sleep the antitrust laws has caused mergers of the large grocery stores to become not just large, but to become mega large, okay? To the point where there are only four or five national superstore grocery stores in the country. And because there are only four or five, their price conduct is not competitive. They know that if they raise the price, their four competitors, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, without any conversation, will raise the price as well. And we saw that happen during this last period of inflation when the price of groceries went up far faster than inflation because, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, these small number of competitors understood that if they raised the prices, the price would stick because their competitor would see the benefit of raising the price as well.
But people were led to believe that this happened because of Joe Biden's policies. And that the price of groceries went through the roof.
Yeah.
And a president was responsible for it.
Well, that was politically expedient and a politically motivated argument, because now the politically motivated argument of the incoming president is, you know what, the president really can't do much about these prices, okay? And the fact is that the president himself can't, but government policies associated with antitrust have set the table in America for us having something that looks much more like oligopoly rather than competition.
So, Sandy, if the Robinson-Patman Act looked at things and kind of held things in check, why did it get weak?
Well, no. These laws are there, and they can be used to hold things in check. But that's the problem with attacking the so-called administrative state and destroying the effectiveness of government. The Robinson-Patman Act is only as effective as the government wants to enforce it, okay? And if the government decides not to bring enforcement actions, then who cares whether there's a Robinson-Patman Act?
Well, the people... Well, I mean, as an average person, and we talk about...
Should care. I'm saying...
Right.
But it's put to sleep, right? It's comatose.
And I think it is because people don't know it's there. 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. Yeah, that means Tuesday's my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. As the winter season drags on and respiratory viruses like RSV and the flu circulate the state with more people gathering inside, health officials say vaccination rates have continued to decline. According to the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, about 31% of residents have gotten their flu shots so far this year. That figure is about 10% lower than the typical flu vaccination rate prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. DHS data also shows only about 15% of state residents have gotten an updated COVID vaccine this winter. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is asking residents to cut back on salt use during the winter months to help protect the state's waterways. Salt is commonly used to make roads and walkways safer during the winter, but DNR data found that chloride levels in the state's rivers has risen dramatically over the last 20 years. Officials are recommending residents use less salt by shoveling their driveways before ice forms and switching to a more effective ice melter than salt when temperatures start to dip below 15 degrees. The Rice Lake Area School District is announcing schedule changes for its four-year-old kindergarten program next year. According to district officials, starting in the 2025-2026 school year, there will be 5 full days of 4K programming at Tainter Elementary School, Hilltop Daycare and Preschool, and Haugen Elementary School. Students enrolled in the programs will attend the school closest to their home, where they will continue until fourth grade. The expanded programs will not come with any added cost, and school lunches will be available. The City of Superior is considering expanding an initiative to add second-story housing options for buildings with ground floor storefronts. Cities across Wisconsin are struggling with the increased price of homes and the overall lack of housing stock. Planning officials say the City of Superior needs at least 1,000 more housing units to meet the current need. One solution would be working with the owners of retail properties to create more housing in existing buildings with things like tax incentives or low-interest loan programs. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The show must go on. Despite wildfires continuing to burn, production will start up again in Los Angeles. After being put on hold last week, Variety reports that shows like Jimmy Kimmel Live, NCIS Origins, and The Neighborhood will resume production. Other shows like Hacks, Suits LA, Ted, and Amazon's Fallout have not resumed production after being affected last week. Hollywood continues to rally around the victims of the LA fires. The latest organization to donate money is the Screen Actors Guild and American Federation of TV and Radio Artists. SAG-AFTRA had closed its offices due to the fires, which started January 7th. The union also postponed its in-person award nominating ceremony. SAG-AFTRA president, actress Fran Drescher, offered support to victims and those who have lost their homes and announced her union would donate $1 million to victims through the SAG-AFTRA Foundation. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
It is cold out there again this morning with a wind chill from minus 15 to minus 20. And we're going to keep that wind chill generally below zero for a good chunk of the day. Sunshine today with a high near 10. Tonight, 6 below. Tomorrow, breezy, mostly cloudy, but warmer with a high of 24. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, 7 below zero.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I drew my brother's name one year and we went to the mall and I said, hey, while you're in there, grab me a Christmas card. We're doing the gift exchange later. So he walks upstairs, gets the card, hands it to me. I sign it, Merry Christmas. Love, Pete. And that was my gift to him that I made him pick out, pay for, and retrieve. He's like, you are the laziest, cheapest. It was absolutely beautiful.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Here's what the WSJ had said after J6. This week has probably finished Donald Trump as a serious political figure. Boy, that hasn't aged well, has
it? No, not at all.
In the Wall Street Journal. So after what they just said 4 years ago, Maggie, they couldn't bring it upon themselves to say that guy who did that shouldn't be anywhere near the White House again. Nope, couldn't do it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on this show, our colleague Jimmy Cuska joins us to talk about potential changes within Wisconsin sports. Not everybody's happy. And how much money are we spending already on that Wisconsin Supreme Court race? Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
songs by the Beatles.
No, this is Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, Simon and Garfunkel. Well, they did it too. A lot of people
yeah,
did.
Yeah, a lot of people
yeah.
did.
Yeah. Came out in about 1971 or somewhere around there.
Right, yeah.
Late 60s, early 70s.
And I think this was written by Simon and Garfunkel.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my co-host, Sandy Williams and Sandy.
Well, today's music is about empathy and ultimately the bridge over troubled waters. That's what empathy is, I think. So,
let me ask you, Sandy. There is talk. I was hearing it might have been yesterday when they were saying, well, maybe – if TikTok is going to be sold, maybe Elon Musk should purchase it. And so I would think that there would be something in our government that would probably say that's not a good idea.
Well, I suspect that Donald Trump, the incoming president, would probably think it's a great idea, okay? But And you would think that the antitrust laws might be exercised to avoid that level of power. You know, Elon Musk owns X, which is one of the biggest social media, and then TikTok, which is, I think, right now the biggest of the social media, or the most active, at least. But I'm not sure that that power would be exercised. It certainly is not going to be exercised by a Justice Department that is reporting to and beholden to Donald Trump. I think we need to worry about the notion that the richest man in the world is amassing the kind of power, political power, and that he is, as well as social and media power, because you know, now he threatened the U.S. senators, saying that any Republican who voted against the cabinet nominees of Donald Trump, he would spend millions of dollars to beat them in a primary. And, you know, he's exercising his political muscle in the United States and Germany and England all around. And so I think we've got a situation here where someone is getting extremely powerful. And certainly antitrust laws ought to be considered with respect to the kind of power that he would have in social media.
So, but Sandy, with Donald Trump in office and the judicial system weakened because of Donald Trump, anything is possible.
Well, first of all, the Justice Department would bring the Sherman Act, the antitrust actions against this, unless a competitor brought the action. So typically, injunctions against mergers are the result of actions by the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice, particularly under the concepts presented in Project 2025, will be beholden to the president and his policies and will not exercise and flex its policy muscle without the acquiescence of the president. So I think that one thing that the people ought to understand is when they elect Donald Trump, if he implements government the way Project 2025 proposes it to be implemented, or the way he in fact tried to implement it during his first term, we will see that the antitrust laws will go to sleep, particularly in the areas of mergers that he finds attractive, and it might be deployed only when he finds it attractive to deploy it, as he did during his first term when he decided he would exercise it against those who were politically in opposition to him.
He's in the process of doing those things as we speak. And so many of the people who elected him, who voted for him, they were warned about Project 2025, but Project 2025 is in process.
Well,
is it safe to say that?
It is safe to say that. It is in process with the Department of Education, with the way the White House is being organized. We shall see how many people get fired within the first few weeks of his presidency, but I would bet my bottom dollar that it's many thousands of people, and that the kind of White House establishment that's going to be created is going to look very much like exactly what Project 2025 was recommending. And certainly he is interested in having the FBI serve at his discretion. He's already fired or told, you know, the FBI director's gone. He's going to have one of his own choosing. And the Department of Justice, he's going to deploy as he sees fit. And so I think that all of this is going to happen, and now we have to watch.
All right, so you've conjured up CJ. Good morning, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. Trust me, I was trying to call you earlier, but my phone, I forgot okay. to plug it in last night. But I can tell you this, Sandy, the only thing we need as far as being cynic is the results of this now the worst president alive since Jimmy Carter passed away.
Well, you CJ, you always ask why we cut you off.
CJ,
let me
just ask you. You called CJ, and so my interest was in teeing up the notion of empathy and seeing if we could get people to exercise it. And let me ask you, you know, you've talked frequently about wanting to debate any time, any place, but you understand that in the world of debate, in the world of competitive debate, people don't know what side they're going to debate until moments before the debate starts. They have to come with their box full of cards, giving them the information they need to argue either side of the case. And so I guess I'd like you to think that way for a minute. You know, you call in and are quite vehement about the notion that, for instance, I'm a liberal, and that you find objection to the notion of my liberality. And I wondered if you could describe, you know, make the case for me as to why it is, number one, that I might be a liberal and what it is that I'm trying to accomplish with liberality. Do I have bad intent, or what is my intent that you would expect me to have?
Well, I don't actually, I guess the way you phrase the question isn't quite the way I think, because
you've imputed
you to defend the results of
I'm not talking about political results here today. Today, what we've been talking about is an approach to dealing with other people, and particularly dealing with other people with whom we might disagree. I haven't been defending anything that went on during the Biden administration or necessarily until these last minutes when we changed the subject, the Trump administration. What we've been talking about is the process of empathy, and can you exercise it? I mean, the point of empathy is to try and, I mean, I could try to make your case. Can you try to make my case for me?
Well, I certainly can, and I am empathetic, but I guess I wish you'd use the same criteria, because really, look at the results of where our country is.
No. That's where the, but no. I'm talking about, you have imputed to me and to Earl the fact that we are liberals, and somehow a liberal is something that you don't want to be. It's someone who you disagree with fundamentally. And then my question to you is, can you try to put yourself into the shoes of someone who you describe as being a liberal? Because describing someone as a liberal is starts out with cynicism, right? You've already imputed to me something that you disagree with.
Well, can I use the military, for example? I am empathetic that the Pollyanna world that you and your party and Earl want to live in, the military is not there for wokeness. They are there to break things and kill people, and ultimately.
Okay, well,
that's
what
we're bringing back.
Okay, well, all right. I mean, CJ, we should end the conversation, because you're not trying. All right, you're not trying to do this process. You're simply making your arguments and imputing to you just express cynicism. You said that the Pollyanna world that I live in. I'm not sure you understand at all what my view of the military is. And for that matter, I'm not sure you understand what the view of the incoming administration is with respect to the use of that military, for instance, in Ukraine.
Well, I may not be on the same page with Donald Trump on Ukraine, but I certainly wasn't with Obama
or Biden. And we now have, but nothing happened in Ukraine during Trump.
Thank you very much for the call. So, I mean, that's a prime example.
Well, this proves that you're right, that it is very hard for people to exercise empathy when they have a very, when they have a perception of the other side, which is something they can't abandon.
Let's bring Bill in from O'Connell. Good morning to you, Bill. Thank you for the call. You say what?
Well, I heard you and Sandy take the gunpowder off CJ's bullets. He can't understand that concept. It boggles his mind. It's not even conceivable in his mind. And by the way, CJ, I grew up military. The great generals, all the officers in the armed forces know how to prevent war. They all know how to create war. You should kill and destroy things. You don't get that part of the military. The military there is to prevent, not create. So, but let me move on. I have a question for Earl and Sandy. I can't wait. I think with the devastation out in California, Trump has suddenly gone kind of a little bit silent. He's still spouting this and that. But the bottom line is, if you're there to solve the problem, join. If you're not, stay home. Case in point, there's a lot of Christian foundations. Look it up, how many people are helping now. California could end up better as a result of this devastation, if we work together on it. If we want to point fingers, stay home and point the fingers after California's rebuilt. Trump can't even operate in a climate like that, much like CJ. They can't comprehend a big word. It's called humanitarianism. And I want your thoughts. I'm going to hang up.
Thank you very much for the call. You know, Bill, Sandy and I kind of broached that subject earlier this morning about what happens, you know, after in Los Angeles. It's a big, it's almost inconceivable to think of how much has been done there, Sandy, as far as the damage.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the firebombing that occurred in some places in World War II, or Hiroshima even.
It's leveled.
I mean, it's leveled and eliminated vast areas of California, schools, places of work. Shopping areas, homes, I mean, entire communities gone. And you know, what strikes me is I'm glad that it, and I think that maybe Donald Trump has perceived this, but his effort to politicize this is not going to redound to his benefit. You know, and I thought Gavin Newsom's response was good, which is, yeah, come out here, talk to me face to face. Don't troll me on the internet, but come out here and see what's happening. Talk to me face to face, gather some facts, and you know, then we can talk.
You know, he's going to be the president shortly, and all of this is Joe Biden's fault, is not going to fly. He's going to be the guy, and nobody's accepting, well, that happened under Joe Biden.
Well, you know, he deflected in 2018 when the biggest fires ever happened in California. It was because they weren't raking the forests, he said, of the Finnish prime minister had told him that. Then the Finnish prime minister had to come on and say, yeah, I never told him that. You know, he's very good at pointing fingers. And I think that one thing that the Tom, Dick, and Mary ought to do is tell Donald Trump that the buck stops there.
So certain areas have been completely leveled. It's going to take a year to just, it's like Hamas. It's actually like Gaza.
Gaza, yeah.
It's going to take a year just to clean stuff out. Where do these people? It's a big deal, and there shouldn't be division, right?
No, there's plenty of room for help, not too much room for criticism.
Maybe the conversation we were having earlier today
should apply.
Yes. 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. Tuesday's my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In the first week of the new session of the Wisconsin State Legislature, Republicans fast-tracked a measure that would put a question on the ballot in the upcoming spring election that would enshrine voter ID in the state constitution. Two things on this. First, it is telling that Republicans made this their very first order of business. Senate Democratic leader Dianne Hesselbein responded to this, saying it's not cost of living or health care or gun violence that Republicans wanted to focus on, but a constitutional amendment. Telling, isn't it? But that leads to the second piece. Republicans are clearly doing this for politically motivated reasons. By having this on the spring election ballot, they're betting it will make it more likely that people who showed up to vote for Donald Trump in November will be heading to the polls to help elect right-wing candidate Brad Schimmel to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That election is on April 1st, so buckle up.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbush Show.
Donald J. Trump has been officially certified the winner of the 2024 election the way that the Constitution dictates. You see how simple that is? There's a vote, you certify the results, democracy moves on. You might not like the results. The person I wanted to have elected didn't win, but that's the way democracy works. Unlike 4 years ago on January 6th, where rioters stormed the Capitol.
The Todd Allbush Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
I know that voice, too. Who is that?
Gotta look.
All right, 855-752-4842.
Jackie DeShannon.
You could text us at that same number. It's Tuesdays. That means Tuesdays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, let's go right to the phone lines. Jack from Merrimack. Good morning to you, Jack. Thank you for holding. You say what?
Good morning. Well, yeah, first of all, I've been saying this for decades, even since I was in college in the 60s, even before Reagan's lie that the government was the problem. Government is not the problem. Government should be the answer. Our only real protection against big business is government big and strong enough to actually enforce real regulations upon these huge businesses. So things like what Sandy was talking about, de facto monopolies, aren't allowed to happen. Now, Rick Smith in his program hits this repeatedly. Our real issue is big money and its control of society. Billionaires, big corporations control prices. They fight off everything from reasonable regulations to increasing the minimum wage to unionization. Probably the major reason that there's no real discussion of this, which is our real enemy, is that for a decade, true believers have been sold by the Fox News propaganda and other propaganda and networks on the lie. The problem is the other, meaning illegals or transgender people or even someone who's not in total agreement with their politics. That's how tribalist has become. And it's an approach that uses intentional lies to stir up fear, leading to anger and hatred, and it purposely is used to distract people from these very real problems. It's been an avalanche of these lies for a decade. Hannah Arendt, the German historian who studied the Nazis, stated, "This constant lying is not aimed at making people believe the lie, but to ensure no one believes anything anymore, and a people that can no longer distinguish between truth and lies can't distinguish between right and wrong." And this is the problem. This is why we have such a difficult time coming up with a reasonable conversation with these people. They have no idea what's the truth and what isn't.
Sandy, you want to respond? I think he's spot on.
Well, I do. Yes, absolutely. I think that one thing that this whole attack on the so-called administrative state, making the deep state the enemy, is really big business gaslighting and deflecting everyone's attention from what's going on in the economy to blaming other things. It's the government. It's not the politicians. It's the government. It's the faceless bureaucrats. It's the immigrants coming into this country. So it's a deflection of blame, so, because everyone understands that right now the architecture of our economy and the trajectory of our economy is not good. Tom, Dick, and Mary are having trouble. The bottom 20% of our population is in probably the worst condition they've been in a long, long time. And so, you know, what do you do about that? Well, either the government reacts to it, because the government is the only joint tool we have. It's the only way for people to gather their force and to accomplish something. Otherwise, if you leave it to the marketplace, you aren't going to solve the problems that a marketplace that's headed in the wrong direction is taking you. And so, you know, I'm concerned. I think that the ultimate problem here is the success that the Ronald Reagan movement started is having, which is to identify the government as the problem, when the government is the only answer that we can use as a tool.
But the marketplace is controlling the government.
Well, that's the issue. And actually, Adam Smith saw that from the very beginning. You can't give business the ability to run government, because it's government that needs to regulate the business in a variety of ways to preserve the marketplace, to preserve competitive marketplaces, to preserve the public interest that is not otherwise going to be observed and protected by a free market. And so that's what you need government for. And yet, since 1980, it's all been under attack, and the effort now is to try to defang government in every way.
So now that big business can control many of the people in government, what's the saving grace?
I would admonish big business that they're in the process of choking the golden goose. This golden goose only works if it provides for the middle class, if it provides for a spreading of prosperity amongst all of the people in a manner that is satisfactory. And if it fails to do that, then ultimately that goose will die, okay? Meaning that society will react in some fashion that will make it no longer possible to have that kind of business environment. And the people in this country who are getting so very wealthy ought to look at the environment and say, you know what, we need to make sure that this is sustainable, okay? We need a sustainable economy, and we need a sustainable architecture for our economy. And right now, it's not headed in the direction of sustainability.
You know, Sandy, it is it's more than frustrating as you just watch this thing unravel in the most powerful nation, not financially anymore, but the most powerful nation militarily on earth. And you live in it, and you watch it, and you say this can be done better, right? And it should be done better. It's not going to, you know, in order to take away some of the wealth of the wealthiest people on the planet, it's not going to hurt them that much to include other Americans.
No, I mean, the market mechanism out there in the internet market for solving problems is crowdfunding. Well, the government is our crowdfunding. It's our source of joint action, and we better protect it.
All right, 855-752-4842. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin. Up next, Jane Madner and Greg Bach. Madner on air. See you guys on tomorrow.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome dietitian and nutritionist Sherry Stoka, and from the band Ask Your Mother, Eric Rathsack and Adam Krauss join me in the studio. There will be rock.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. Matt Nair on air.
It is our 1 year anniversary here on Matt Nair on air. Thank you, Greg and Calvin, for being on this journey with me. It's been great.
Thanks for having me. I can't speak for Calvin.
I'm always thrilled to be here.
unbridled
the enthusiasm
enjoyment.
Brimming over from you, Calvin. I'm overwhelmed. Thank you.
Matt and Air on Air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is the Buzz of the North.
WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth telling Senate members during his confirmation hearing today that he will be a change agent for Donald Trump if he is confirmed. Democrats like ranking member Jack Reed say that concerns them.
The challenge of the Secretary of Defense is to remove partisan politics from the military. You propose to inject it. This would be an insult to the men and women who have sworn to uphold their own apolitical duty to the Constitution.
Republicans like Chairman Roger Wicker admit that the former Fox News host is unconventional. High winds are back in Southern California, but firefighters are making progress over some of the biggest wildfires around Los Angeles. The Eaton Fire, which destroyed much of Altadena, is now 35% contained. New study finds people over the age of 55 have a 4 out of 10 chance of developing dementia. Regular physical activity, controlling blood pressure, and getting your hearing checked can all help prevent it. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly.